I really need an issue. Okay, dear friends, even it's early afternoon here in Finland, we have a guest speaker, Tom Hatfield from California, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. But that is not the first time it has happened. That happened first time 1999, I think.
Yes.
And it was quite expensive to take this connection from your university to our university. But now it's everything is free, charge, cost nothing. First time I met Tom, please correct, you came to Finland 1992, I think, as
That's
a
right.
visiting Fulbright professor. And we learned to like Tom's courses in the area of environmental risk assessment so much that we started to invite you every year to the University of Kuopio. And you came again and again, and finally you became a docent of environmental technology. But I think it was then I changed university and I went to Tampere Technical University, but Tom followed, and you are also a docent in the University of Tampere Technical University.
Yes.
So he's a vice docent in Finland in the area of environmental risk assessment. And Tom has been giving his courses, and I think up to 3 different courses, I think, all together. And now, lately, we have been cooperating particularly in the area of environmental risk perception and communication. And this is the course what it's going to offer to this next summer. But anyway, Tom knows Finland very well, and I leave the floor, Tom, to you now, and please, can continue. Thank you.
Okay, well, hi, everybody. And thank you for inviting me to your conference. I've been asked to talk about online education, past, present, and future, because I think it has applications to Climate University that you've been talking about. And as Tuula mentioned, I do have a rather long history with Finland. But since my talk is about online education, it really did start 20 years ago in 1999, with a conference of the Society of Finnish Environmental Sciences. I remember certain things about that meeting. I remember that I had to drive to campus after midnight. The university was completely closed. I had to meet with the head of the multimedia department because nobody else knew what to do. And the one thing I remember is that in order to see the audience, it was on a monitor way over to my left. And so at the beginning, I was like, hi, everybody, doing this kind of thing. And then I realized I shouldn't move my head so much, so I was doing one of these things with the eyes. And so it was crazy and fun. But most of all, as I look back and try to draw some lessons that I can share with you today, as I look back at the past, I do recall what we did not have. We had almost no hardware that we take for granted today. Now, I'm not trying to give a commercial for Apple because Apple doesn't need my help. But just so you know, there was no such thing as an iPhone or an iPad, an iWatch, one of these things. None of that existed. We did have cell phones. We did have tablets, but not anything that we would ever need to have a successful online course. And in terms of software, I currently work on the Canvas learning management system. It didn't exist back then. I think Blackboard existed. It was only a year or two old at the time. We didn't have Zoom. You may wonder, what is Zoom? Zoom is what is allowing us to talk right now. None of that existed. So it was quite a challenge back in those days. And I look back at it as the, the pioneering days in online education. But what I reflected on is there is something that we had that was indeed very critical. It's just as important, just as relevant today as it was back then. We had cooperation and trust. In 1999, Tula and I had been working together for 7 years, and I think that we earned each other's trust. And there is no way that we could have been successful in any way, shape, or form unless we had that cooperation and trust among the key participants. So I'm going to be talking with you today about some of the more mechanical aspects of online learning, but I think that we always have to keep in mind that without that cooperation and trust, I think we will be limited in our success. So as far as the present, I could quote to you many different statistics, but the one that sticks with me is right now in the United States, about 1 in every 3 students is taking at least 1 online course. So it has grown tremendously, and it keeps on growing. On the other hand, there is still a significant percentage of faculty that are concerned and not so confident about online learning. And they're great. And the faculty that are not so supportive of online, I do not think constitutes the majority, but they certainly constitute a significant percentage. And their concern, and I know this is no surprise, is with the quality of the online courses. And so that's something that I hope to kind of address today. Today, compared to 20 years ago, we have far better communication. And I'm not just talking about the fact that I can look at my screen and see you and you can see me and so on. But for example, some of you are probably very familiar with this. We have discussion forums on online courses. And this is a very subtle point, but these days we have push notifications. And so if a student goes online to a discussion forum and asks me a question, I get a push notification and it shows up on my watch wherever I am. Now, I might be busy with other things. I might even be asleep, not getting up until the next day. But quite often, I am available. And if there's a notification, I can jump onto online, either through my cell phone or tablet, and I can go ahead and answer the question. Now, why is that significant? It's because it's shortening the amount of time between when a student asks a question and when they get an answer. And that's enormously important for exchanges and communication between student and teachers. Now, there are those who would say, well, gee, in a live class, there is no delay between question and answer. All the student has to do is raise their hand and they get an answer. But if you think about it, that's not really true. What about when you leave the classroom? What about when you're headed for home and you say, gee, wait a minute, I have a question about this. Can you ask a question at that point? All too often, I know faculty who say, well, come in during my office hours. Okay, so you go in during office hours and you wait for a half hour before you get to ask your question. That's a delay. I even know faculty who say, well, you know what, hang on to your question and ask me a week from today. So now there's a week before you get an answer to your question. So if you talk about the average amount of time between when you ask a question and get an answer, the time is much shorter these days than they were even a couple years ago. Another key component is that with an online course, I can turn questions into an assignment. I can say you can get 5 points for your first question. So why is that significant? All too often in classes, there'll be that student that sits in the back of the room that never asks a question. Well, with an online course, I can say, oh, I can tell exactly who has asked a question. I can even send out an email that says, oh, by the way, you haven't asked a question. We'd like to hear from you. And so what that means is not only is the time between question and answer shorter, but there's a broader range of questions, which again adds to better communication. And I don't need to really emphasize this. Multimedia is now commonplace in online. So I can add pictures and audio and video. And these days, there's a massive library of videos to draw upon in answering questions and addressing issues. So this is much better, not only better than 20 years ago, it's better for me than it was a year ago. Also, announcements. Well, announcements aren't very exciting, at least when I first looked at them. It's basically when the instructor sends out an email to the rest of the class. But what I've learned is I can predate my announcements. So I can say in the third week of the semester, I want to send out this message. And not only that, but if I transfer my course from the fall semester to the spring semester, it automatically changes the dates. So something I sent out in the third week in the fall automatically becomes the third week in the spring. Well, because I know that as an instructor, I work very hard on these announcements to make sure that I provide a lot of information to orient the student to the assignment. In fact, I can take the questions that have been asked and factor them into the announcements. I can also provide lots of links so that the announcement becomes a weekly roadmap to all the things that the student needs to access in terms of videos and reading materials and so on. So all of this adds up to a much, much better communication. And let's face it, in order to be successful in any kind of course, in any kind of teaching, there has to be better communication. Well, I want to get into the real meat of my presentation here, because the concern has long been about the quality of online courses. And the answer to this is something called outcomes assessment. Now, how many of you raise your hand if you've ever heard of outcomes assessment? Nobody? Somebody? Okay, some. I'm glad to see there are some. Outcomes assessment refers to tools to look at measuring whether the students are learning what they are supposed to learn. Basically, every course has objectives, and outcomes assessment measures whether the students are achieving those objectives. But rather than talk about outcomes assessment, because you can look up outcomes assessment on your own, I would rather show you my outcomes assessment for last semester to give you some illustrations here. So for example, in my course, I had three objectives: to identify an environmental agent, to identify the health effects from that agent, and to identify controls and prevention so that people don't become sick from that agent. And you can see that those outcomes are intertwined throughout the different weeks of the course. And you can see I addressed different subjects along the way over those 15 weeks. Now, I don't want to analyze everything about it because I have limited time, but I do want to point to this area right here, because what I've learned about outcomes assessment is sometimes counter to the traditional wisdom about outcomes assessment. Some people, perhaps some administrators, might look at this and say, oh, look, Dr. Hatfield, you did such a wonderful job. The class scored a perfect 10. They understand everything perfectly in this area of the course. Most teachers, and I hope most of you, would look at that and say, I don't think that means the class did a perfect job. That may mean the questions were too easy. Maybe I need to provide more challenging questions and get a deeper understanding of the material at this point. Similarly, some people might look at this point and say, oh, maybe the students are too lazy or the professor did a bad job. But what I do, because I am the subject matter expert, I understand the topic that I'm looking at, I look down here and I see, oh, this is talking about water quality. So I'm talking about agents in the water, microbial and chemical agents. Well, I already know from 30 years of teaching, this is always one of the most challenging parts of my course. So outcomes assessment is telling me what I already know. This is no surprise to me. It is a fundamentally more challenging material. So I think that you cannot look at outcomes assessment as this is good and this is bad. I would rather say these are flags, not red flags, but just, oh boy. okay. Well, there are still glitches, aren't there? Sorry about that. Okay, so these are flags. So I have to assign my own meaning to these squiggly lines. The meaning isn't in the lines. The meaning is the way that I interpret it. So I agree. I could be more challenging with this part of the course, and I'm not going to be easier with this other portion. I'm going to have to provide more supporting materials, more clarification, more guidance in these materials. And so as I look at these materials, it gives me clues and evidence. That's the key thing, evidence for how to improve the course. So outcomes assessment, when they are in the online environment, are offered in real time. At any given point, as students take the quizzes and the data come in, I can tell how the students are doing. I can tell how they're doing by quiz, as I've done in the graphic that you just saw, but I can also see how the outcomes are for each student. So a student may say, well, I want to do better in the course. How can I improve? I can say, for example, well, I noticed that you're not doing as well in health effects compared to the rest of the class. So I encourage you to pay more attention to health effects, ask more questions on the discussion forum, and I can point the way for you for certain issues that relate to health effects. This provides guidance to the student that is more than just anecdotal and more than just instincts of the professor, but is based on actual evidence of the performance of the student. And finally, I can do outcomes assessment among classes. So for example, I can compare how I'm doing this semester compared to that last semester compared to the semester before. And it's not just based on my subjective reactions, but once again, it's based on actual evidence according to the objectives of the course. Of course, the question that gets asked over and over again, and I still hear it, is how do you compare online courses to face-to-face courses? In the modern era, I would say that those comparisons are increasingly blurred, that you can't make clear distinctions between the two for a variety of reasons. For example, conferencing. This is what we're doing right now. I can see you, you can see me, you can hear me, and so on. And that's a lot more similar to a live class than some of the older online courses. It's not the same, I know it's not the same, but the distinctions become a little more blurred. Of course, there are hybrid courses, and we're aware of those, that it's part online and part face-to-face. When those get added in, again, the comparisons are blurred. And all the different tools, as they get better, increasingly blur the comparisons of online and face-to-face. And finally, whatever differences we might find among online and face-to-face are not that much compared to differences among courses. For example, some courses simply may not do as well in the online environment. There are differences among students. I know that for the more advanced students, for students that are more disciplined, they do extremely well with online courses. We may have differences compared to the students that are taking the course. There are differences among instructors. How can I say this delicately? If an instructor is not very good in a face-to-face environment, they're probably not going to be much better in an online environment. So we have to add in those differences. And then finally, over time, my course is not the same from semester to semester because I keep making changes according to the outcomes that I assess. So the real question is not whether one kind of course is fundamentally better than the other. We can agree that probably each of them can be better depending on the assessment. We have to do the hard work of assessing how well the students perform at the end of the class and at the end of the material. So in more recent years, in order to improve outcomes assessment and in order to improve online courses, we've seen the growth of certification of online courses. So what is certification? Well, for me, certification of courses comes down to two things. The first is validated rubrics. And okay, so what's a rubric? A rubric is a list. Now, it might have a scoring system associated with it, but basically, it's a list of things that you need to do to improve your course. And validated means that it's been validated by the research. So we've had a lot of research already that says there are various items that can improve the outcomes of courses. And they have been validated, and all you have to do is go through the list, and it won't make your course perfect, and it won't eliminate the need for you to grow with the course, but it will give you the key components that research shows will improve the outcomes of the course. Of course, the other key component of certification is that there is training. You take people who are experienced with these rubrics, and they take faculty, and they run them through the training to become better at these courses. One of the most common of these certification programs is online. It's called qualitymatters.org, and you can go there and see it on your own time. And it's a checklist of over 50 items that are thought to be the most closely associated with success in online courses. But I also want to call your attention to something that's offered by the CSU. Now, I remind you, I'm at CSU Northridge, but there are over 20 CSUs located in various places in California. So the entire CSU system has adopted a system that they call QLT. QLT stands for Quality Learning and Teaching, but I suppose that doesn't matter much. What they have done is to take the rubrics in Quality Matters, because it's all based on established research, but they've added in performance measures. So let me give you an example of what I mean. One of the items that consistently shows success in online courses is in discussion groups, where students can ask questions and the faculty give the answer. So if you go to a checklist with Quality Matters, they'll have something to the effect of you should have a Q&A section. What the CSU does is they go further and say, okay, how many questions were asked? If only 3 questions were asked during the entire class, that's not very good. We would rather see an active, involved Q&A section in the class. And so they look at that as a performance measure. Now, let me get to why this might be relevant to students and faculty in Finland. Any group can adopt their own certification. Any group can take a look at other kinds of certification systems, other checklists, think about other performance matters, and add in their own certification session. As more faculty, like myself, become certified, they've been forced to confront some of the different tools that are out there and how they might get better. If more faculty are certified, I think that it stands to reason, based on the research, that we could see continued improvement in online courses. And again, this is something that can be adapted to different university systems as each system sees fit. So I'm running out of time. I want to talk about the future. I do not have any magical powers to predict the future, but I do think there are some trends that make these some pretty safe predictions. The first is we're all familiar with apps. We all have apps on our cell phones and tablets. We are seeing apps just on the horizon. There's a group at UC Berkeley, another at Harvard University that have been working on this with artificial intelligence. So for example, suppose you have 100 papers that you have to grade. You can put it through an app based on artificial intelligence that will grade the paper for you. Now, some people are very afraid of artificial intelligence. They think it'll take away the human component. I am not, and here's why. the professor still has to go through that artificial intelligence and indicate whether they agree. So I may look at it and say, no, I don't care about that aspect of the paper. So I can say, no, take that out. Oh, yes, I do like this item. This should be included in the grading. And I can even add in my own criteria into the grading. So you might put through 100 papers, have it graded in 3 minutes, but then you still have to go in and quickly check each of the grades to see whether you agree. Once again, as I said before, the real meaning does not come from the program. The real meaning comes from the professor talking with the students to assign their own meaning to what it means. Also, I think that in the future, there will be different audiences. So let me give you a quick example. Now that my online course is at Cal State Northridge, I'm able to have students from all of the Cal State schools. They've made it easier for students to enroll. And so if I have students from San Diego State or Long Beach State or San Francisco State, I can say, hey, if you're interested in environmental health, maybe you could come to our graduate program. Well, all programs are interested in recruiting, but what this does is it allows me to recruit from a larger population of students. Also, I think that this can recruit faculty as well. So, for example, I'm semi-retired. If someone said to me, Dr. Hatfield, will you teach a course at our university? By the way, you'll have to come in 3 days a week. You'll have to fight the freeways in Southern California to get there, and so on. My answer, I will tell you quite honestly, I don't think that that would be much fun. I don't think I want to do that at this point in my career. But if you said, well, maybe it could be an online course, I think that you'd be able to recruit more faculty, including me. Also in the future, I think that assessment will only get better. There's a group at Canvas, that's the platform that I teach my courses with, that's working on predictors of outcomes. So imagine, for example, that we found correlations on what I did in the third week of the course with outcomes at the ninth week of the course. Now, there's a couple of problems with this. The first is correlation is not causation. I think we all know that. The second is I might find correlations that are no surprise to me. I might say, well, of course, this would correlate. But I would still be interested in seeing correlations and potential predictors of outcomes because it might give me additional ideas. Once again, I'm the one as the instructor that has to decide whether it's meaningful and whether it can work. And how am I going to know that it's going to work? I'm going to be able to tell by future outcomes assessment, by student evaluations, because I still want to know what the students think, and by talking about it with my colleagues and fellow subject matter experts. I finish with one of the key items that I started with. In the future, will we see more trust? Well, I certainly hope so, because it always comes down to a question of trust. I think there are amazing possibilities with online education, but quite frankly, I don't think we will get much further without building trust among the participants. And if I've had any success whatsoever in the last 20 years, I assure you it was built off of the trust that we had among the key participants. And Tula, that includes you, of course. By the way, if you are interested in issues of perception and trust, I have an online course on risk communication and perceptions coming at the end of May. So please excuse me for giving a commercial for one of my courses. So with that, I bring this talk to a close and ask if there are any questions and comments, because I think that may be the best part of the presentation. So anybody, do you have questions or comments?
You can come here and ask questions. If no one has yet, I can start by asking about this artificial intelligence. It is, or is it really in use in some of your courses? That
no, it is not. I know that there are groups at Harvard and Berkeley that have been working on this. I have seen what I believe are prototypes. When I go to the list of apps that they provide in the Canvas system. So far, I have not seen it, but I've heard about it, and I think that it is coming. I do know that there's a lot of suspicion about this. Who is it? Elon Musk, who thinks that artificial intelligence, the robots are going to take over, and the humans are no longer relevant. I think that's a bunch of baloney when it comes to online courses, because in the end, it always comes down to the students and the teacher. That will never go away. I just don't see that happening. But I do see it as a very important aid. So far, no, I have not seen it. By the way, if you have seen anything about this, please email me. Please let me know, because we're anticipating these changes over the horizon.
Thank you. It sounds very fascinating.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm going to anticipate one question while you're thinking about questions, okay? So I still want questions. Some people have asked the question about, with distance learning, what about the intellectual property rights? That's a question that comes up a lot. Let me say up front, I am not a lawyer. And so in terms of the legal issues of intellectual property rights, I would defer to those who have the legal experience. But I can talk about my experience, and I would start by saying it's critical to say, when there is an agreement on an online course, to be clear and to be consistent. Okay? It's not good to have surprises when you're trying to reach agreements on online courses. And I will use Tula again as an example. Whenever we have been developing a course, Tula has been extremely clear and extremely consistent. Okay, Tom, this is what you can expect. This is what will happen. There will sometimes be times when Tula says, now, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to try to do that. That's a perfect example of, at that point, I have a choice. Am I going to trust Tula? Well, I can tell you, after 27 years, yes, I am going to trust Tula. So I think that that trust becomes an important component regardless of the legal issues. The legal issues don't go away, but the trust still continues to be important. And the other thing that I want to add is to take a look at the big picture. An online course is more than some kind of paycheck for the professor. Over the years, my affiliation with the different Finnish universities have led to grants. They've led to publications. They've led to insights that I have that I never would have had without teaching to Finnish audiences. And so those things are worth money to me. And in fact, those things are worth more than money to me. And so if you take a long-term view of these online courses, I think once again, you end up with building trust and seeing that there's more to it than just the paycheck. And so I want to break the myth that Americans are only concerned about money. No, we are not. So, anything else? Any questions? I do have one more point, if we have time. I promise to be quick. Someone asked about transfer of credits between universities. That's often a messy problem with distance learning, and I don't know that I have the solution, but I have some ideas. The first thing I would say to any student who's taking an online course who wants to get credit for it at the university is to, first of all, talk with the faculty ahead of time, but we always want to see transcripts, which are evidence that you have taken the course, and usually we want to see the syllabus for the course. But I have often, in my program, said, if I can see the transcript and I can see the number of units that you got and maybe an explanation on what those units mean, and I see the syllabus and it's related, I will often give credit for the course. It's even better if you can reach a memorandum of understanding between the university programs. And we're increasingly seeing continuing education units, CEUs. So for example, in the state of California, practicing professionals must take continuing education to keep their skills up to date. and online courses have played a critical role. And so what happens is there's an agreement between the universities and the agencies that are involved to say, okay, these courses will be involved for so many units. But whether it's an informal agreement between you and the professor or the department chair, or a more formal agreement with an MOU, I see that transfer credits of credits can happen. Okay, so you've had some time. Anybody else? Any questions?
Is it possible to contact you by email?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for reminding me of that. I gave my email address at the very beginning of the presentation. I find that all too often Finnish audiences are very polite and they don't want to disagree in a presentation. So I invite you to send me emails, whether good or bad. If you say, well, now, wait a minute, I don't agree on this particular point. Feel free to send me an email. I learn from these presentations as well. And if you thought I made an important point, of course, I like hearing that as well. So I definitely welcome emails.
Okay, thank you, Professor Hatfield.
Thank you very much. Very enjoyable. And I hope to see some of you this summer, perhaps.
Yep. Thank okay. you. We thank appreciate you. It that Bye. You woke up so early. Bye.
It was fun. Okay.